This month, The Spectator becomes the first magazine in history to print 10,000 issues, and we'd like to celebrate with you. Subscribe to The Spectator for 12 weeks for just £12. Plus, we'll send you a bottle of commemorative Spectator gin, absolutely free. Go to spectator.co.uk/celebrate.
Hello and welcome to Coffee House Shots, The Spectator's daily politics podcast. I'm Cindy Yu and I'm joined by Katie Bors and Fraser Nelson. This evening, the Prime Minister has had to go to hospital as his coronavirus symptoms still have not gone after 10 days. Katie, what do we know about this?
So we know the Prime Minister has gone to hospital. He is staying there overnight. But at the moment, this is not an emergency visit. He has gone to hospital and to seek medical advice because he has persistent symptoms. So the idea is, after 10 days, they would have thought these symptoms would have gone by now. And we understand these are the classic symptoms of coronavirus, a high fever, along, you know, various things like a cough. They have not gone, and that's why he's gone in. So the suggestion so far and what we're hearing is this is about symptoms that are continuing rather than necessarily an escalation of those symptoms. So for now, the Prime Minister is allegedly still in control. He is leading, and Number 10 are very clear that he is not stepping aside yet and letting a de facto deputy step in. However, it is worth noting that because he is in hospital, it will be Dominic Raab leading the morning meeting tomorrow in the place of the Prime Minister. And Dominic Raab, as First Secretary of State, is the so-called designated survivor. So whether Dominic Raab has to officially step in this week, I think depends a lot on what comes back from those tests. But for now, Boris Johnson is still the working Prime Minister.
Fraser, how bad is this timing for him to be going to hospital, even just for tests? The Sunday Times today, for example, reports of rifts within government between the Treasury and the Department of Health.
I don't think it should make too much difference, to be honest. I mean, we're told he's going in for tests, nothing more. I doubt those tests should delay him more than a day. It's not like he's going to be laid out in hospital for days on end. If what Downing Street tell us is true, that he's basically just got a temperature which ought to have cleared up by now, so he's going for more tests, then this won't make any operational impact to the way the government's running. And I also will tell you this, that it doesn't really matter if he's in hospital or if he's number 10, you're still going to get these tensions. You're still going to get the Treasury really worried about the escalating cost of a lockdown. You're going to get the Department of Health, which is worried about the trajectory, if we're going to peak in 10 days time or not. All of these tensions are going to be there no matter whether or not Boris Johnson is in hospital getting tests or back behind his desk at number 10.
Now, Fraser, you talk as if Boris Johnson is going to be bouncing back to work after his tests in the hospital overnight. But Katie, I mean, how realistic is that? We know from doctors' advice that you should at least be taking out a few days just to recover from this illness.
So right now, it seems to me that the biggest problem and the biggest obstacle for Boris Johnson is not the idea of working remotely. We know that the bulk of government is now working remotely. There's very few people actually in the Downing Street building, you know, whether it's aides or ministers. We can see that on cabinet conference calls. But actually, it's about the recovery. So even if it is the case that his symptoms don't, you know, they do not get worse, but they are persistent, he potentially just needs a few days out to actually not so perhaps relax, but just to try and recover. And I think if you're a prime minister and you are dealing with quite a severe illness in terms of the day-to-day effect it's having on you, and we understand that, for example, those Twitter videos he's been putting out, it's very much the best of him on a day. In between, he is not looking as good as that. So I think what is very difficult here is it's very clear he's incredibly reluctant to step aside, to let someone else lead even briefly, because he wants to show that he is the Prime Minister for this crisis. But it might be the most sensible thing to do, given that these symptoms are so persistent and they are not going away, to actually have some sort of time out and take that time to recuperate. So I think that is going to be one of the things that his team around him are going to have to think about. But it's quite clear from the Prime Minister's own personality that they are not going to want to do that. I think even on doctor's orders, they would potentially resist it. But I think it could be where we are heading, given that the symptoms just don't seem to be going away.
Also, number 10 does feel right now, but lots of parts of government aren't really quite delivering. So that will make him particularly reluctant to hand over the reins, because he'll think the various government departments and the bureaucracy need to be ridden pretty hard to get things done.
Katie, this evening the Queen has also given her statement to the country. This is what she had to say.
We should take comfort that while we may have more still to endure, better days will return. We will be with our friends again. We will be with our families again. We will meet again. But for now, I send my thanks and warmest good wishes to you all.
What did you make of the message?
Well, I think it's had an overwhelmingly positive reaction so far. I think the very fact that this is the point at which the Queen has made her address to the nation, we know that she does these things very rarely. And I think within government, there is a sense that you should only, in a way, play this card at the time and it will be the most effective. So I think not only in terms of what she was saying about the difficulties that the country has in the weeks to come, but also the timing shows you just how bad I think the next fortnight is expected to be in terms of the death toll, in terms of the number of cases. She did try and end on a more uplifting note, saying we will meet again, and that was a reference to Vera Lynn. I think it was interesting, if you looked through her whole speech, how we've often heard Boris Johnson talking about how coronavirus requires a wartime effort in terms of the government and the country. I think there was a message the Queen also is putting across, and clearly because she has lived through the Second World War, I think it had a lot of potency to everyone watching at home.
And Fraser, last thing, a pretty incredible day of breaking news as well. The Scottish Chief Medical Officer, Catherine Calderwood, has stepped down after she was found to be flouting her own social distancing rules. Fraser, can you tell us what happened here and, you know, why she had to step down in the end?
Sure. Catherine Calderwood is, as Scotland's chief medical officer, she has found herself in the political limelight. And one of the things that we've seen in the last 2 or 3 weeks is what happens to these government advisors, medical advisors, scientific advisors, who end up the public face, who end up basically thrust into a political role. Now, they can use language sometimes like herd immunity, which sends a worrying message to people that they have to row back on. And in her case, she didn't learn the lesson that you have to do what you're telling others to do. So it's pretty difficult for her to say, stay at home, you have to do this, it saves lives. And then to go twice off to her her holiday home in Fife. It's about an hour north of Edinburgh. Now, I have to say that I do feel a wee bit sorry for her. I mean, you need to have a politician's kind of nervous system to work out, am I going to be followed if I go home? Are there going to be photographers? It wouldn't have entered her head that this would have been a media storm. If it had done, she wouldn't have done so. Her expertise is medical. From what I can gather, she's pretty good at the job she now no longer holds. So I think it's a rather sad way to end her career. But then again, perhaps it was inevitable. If you look at the form of words they put out, she was saying, the First Minister and I have had a further conversation this evening and we have agreed that the justifiable focus on my behaviour risks becoming a distraction. That's code, I think, for the fact that Nicola Sturgeon asked her to go. Now, as we were saying earlier on, it's nice weather right now. The next week's going to be a scorcher. It's going to be very, very difficult for the government to tell people to stay inside. It will be even harder for the Scottish government to do that if a Scottish medical officer herself was flouting those rules. So I think that's why she had to go. It's understandable, but I do think it's a shame, and I do think this throws up some of the problems which we get when, in order for the public to trust what the government says, you put these medical experts into the limelight, and the medical experts do get caught out by traps normally set for politicians.
Nicola Sturgeon was clearly very reluctant to do this. We know that from the fact that after the story emerged in The Sun, she stayed in place and then appeared at a rather strange press conference today, where quite clearly the fact that the chief medical officer was there following the story meant that did become the story. But you could see efforts all around to try and keep Calderwood in place. I think that one of the difficulties is that clearly it was quite hypocritical to suggest that people shouldn't leave their homes and then go to your second home several times, particularly if you look at some of the Highland communities, the Hebrides, there's a real concern in parts of Scotland that people are going to self-isolate in second homes or holiday homes. So it's a very potent issue. But also, what Nicola Sturgeon needs, and really any leader needs, is the best possible medical advice over the coming weeks. So I think that this is a loss to government in terms of the input, in terms of the expertise they bring to the role, but it clearly did become untenable in a public-facing role. But I still don't think it's a clear win in terms of, you know, where this has gone.
I think the other difficult thing about it was the fact that she had a second home in the first place. Now, one of the things about this lockdown is that it's actually not that bad if you're lucky enough to have a big house with a garden. It's not that bad if you're able to do your job from home. A lot of people aren't. If you've just lost your job, if you live in a small council flat, as many people are doing right now in London, it is very difficult to stay inside, especially when it's very warm outside. And I think there is beginning to be an increasing sense of awareness that this lockdown is affecting the rich and the poor in very, very different ways. So those who do have a second home and can go there, and it's not entirely rational that they would want to go there if they're going to be locked down there, are not going to have it too bad. And I think this will become a greater area of sensitivity for the government, just the way which this lockdown is having such an unequal effect, even though it's being applied to the whole country. And perhaps Nicola Sturgeon saw problems about people with second homes coming down the line and wanted to move to draw a line under this tonight.
Fraser and Katie, thanks very much. And do join us for our next episode, where we'll be catching up on the rest of the news from the weekend, including Labour's new shadow cabinet. Thanks for listening.